Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. This is our first afternoon session after Thanksgiving. And we have three cases set for oral argument, but we're going to hang in there. Your panel this afternoon is, to my right, Justice Sue Walker. To my left, Justice Bill Meyer. I'm Leanne Dofino. And as I say, we have three cases set for oral submission. We may take a break after the second one, but we'll see how we're doing at that point. So I understand everybody's ready to go on the first case. Would you call the case, please? All right. Rebecca, you ready?
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Rebecca Bell, and along with trial counsel, Mr. Stephen Springer, we represent Fire Insurance Exchange. Technically, this case arises from an insurance contract. And the reason I utilize the term technically is because the trial that actually resulted involved more of expanding the duties beyond the terms of an insurance contract on the part of an insurance carrier. I'm sure the court is already familiar with the facts underlying the case and the briefing, but a few items bear mentioning as I move into my argument. The first is that there is no dispute amongst the parties as to the formation of the contract. There's also no dispute amongst the parties regarding whether there is any ambiguity in the contract. The contract itself stands on its own terms, and there is nothing in the briefing or the evidence or the record that would indicate that a fact question was presented to the jury regarding an ambiguous provision, which means, under the precedent of not only this court, but of course the Supreme Court of Texas, we should look at the plain language found within the four corners of that insurance contract. The problem with this case, and you can see it as early as the pleadings themselves, in the clerk's record on page 407, Ms. Kennedy, the homeowner, begins her analysis not with the terms of the contract, but instead with what she believes to be the negligence of a vendor that came to remediate her home. There is no dispute on the part of Farmers, or I'm sorry, I'm used to calling them Farmers, Fire Exchange, and Ms. Kennedy regarding the water leak as a covered event. It is true that on October 10th, 2006, that an upstairs toilet began to leak and caused some water damage, direct damage, not only to that upstairs bathroom, but in terms of where the water immediately proceeded. There's also no dispute, and you'll notice this from the briefing and the record, that on the date of that same incident, as soon as FIE was contacted by Kennedy, there was an immediate instigation of an investigation. There was an immediate response by FIE. And at that same time, FIE told Ms. Kennedy that it would be important that she began her remediation obligations. Now, Defendant's Exhibit 1 at the time of trial, which is found in Volume 14, forms the basis for what should have been the trial, and that's the four corners of the insurance contract. And in the contract, it outlines not only the duties of the insured, but the duties of the insurer, FIE. The duty of the insured is to ensure remediation, is to ensure mitigation of extended damages. That's expressly indicated within the four corners of the contract. The responsibility of FIE is to respond, obviously, in a timely manner, in a manner that matches the statutory requirements of Texas, and to also pay when the time comes for loss payment, if it's a covered peril, to pay for the smallest amount of three categories, the smaller, cash replacement value, the cost to repair, replace of like kind. Those are the obligations of the two parties. Another critical piece of evidence at the time of trial, and again, that should have been dictating what the responsibilities involved, was a correspondence from FIE to Ms. Kennedy that explained not only what her duties were, but also the specific exclusions found within the terms of the policy. Now, on the date of the incident, Ms. Kennedy signed a separate agreement authorizing a third-party vendor called ServiceMaster Team to come out and begin drying the water damage, or drying up the water in order to comply with that sort of obligation for the duty of the insurer. And it was made clear to Ms. Kennedy that FIE would be paying ServiceMaster Team directly for the work that was performed. In fact, that was part of the document that Ms. Kennedy signed. Now, another critical piece of evidence involving that letter was that it expressly stated that Ms. Kennedy had the right to select her own vendor. As I'm sure the court is aware, when you have vendor agreements within insurance companies, car insurance with the tow truck company, if I utilize them, I get a more immediate response and for a greater value, which obviously affects my premium calculations. The same situation occurred here. ServiceMaster Team is one of the preferred vendors for FIE. But the correspondence on October 13th that was forwarded to Ms. Kennedy that she conceded she received and reviewed stated that she had the right to choose her own company, and that company would be obligated to abide by the requirements for drying out after an accidental water leak. And if they exceeded what would be reasonable and necessary costs, that Ms. Kennedy would be responsible for the difference. All of these underlying facts and pieces of evidence lead into what the sole cause of action should have been and upon which any other should have been based, and that's breach of contract. In the situation where there is an unambiguous contract, which there is here.
Are you saying the DTPA question shouldn't have been submitted?
Correct, Your Honor. As this court stated in Petit versus Kaiser, as well as the Austin Court of Appeals and the Evergreen versus Tannett Up case, both of which based on the Allison fire exchange precedent, states the DTPA claim, the unfair practices claim, all of that should stem solely from, one, whether we have a covered event, and two, that Farmers, or FIE, Fire Insurance Exchange, violated the terms of that contract. It's been very clear that if you don't overcome that first threshold hurdle, you never reach any extra contractual or bad faith claims. And that was the problem that we ran into in the underlying case. The case that Ms. Kennedy wanted to try was whether ServiceMaster, an independent vendor, properly dried out her home. In fact, she even went further than that. She also challenged whether this independent, and a non-party, I might add, non-party to the suit, whether they properly tested for mold, whether they properly investigated to see if there was a continued expansion of water, whether they properly tested for dryness. The entirety of the case, and in fact, Ms. Kennedy concedes this in Volume 6 during her testimony, I believe it's starting with page 69 through 74, she concedes that her complaint centers upon ServiceMaster acts or omissions. She further concedes that all of her damages stem from what she believes to be ServiceMaster's acts or omissions.
Where do you challenge submission of the DTPA question? What issue challenges that?
Your Honor, we challenge it in multiple locations, actually. It was initially raised in the pretrial arguments, starting on in Volume 3.
I'm talking about in your brief.
Your Honor, in a few locations. One, as I noted in the reply brief on the counterpoint, the initial briefing outlines the error in submitting the other causes of action if the breach of contract action could not be sustained. It is expansive, and that language is expressed in the brief itself that says the extra contractual claims, and it lists them out, insurance code violations, deceptive trade practice, bad faith, good faith and fair dealing, are inappropriate because the breach of contract claim cannot survive as a matter of law. Although extensive briefing wasn't found in the context of the appellate briefing, the error itself is certainly preserved and is raised in the issues presented for review. I believe the initial brief had 11 issues of review, and one of the items highlighted is that the extra contractual damages must fail as a matter of law because the threshold fails. And the reason the threshold question fails is
not... if the threshold doesn't fail, then you have no other challenges to the DTPA question or the evidence supporting it.
Your Honor, in terms of the appellate, we still challenged it in the context of the appellate briefing. I concede that the initial briefing does not go into the multiple elements of each cause of action. Instead, it would be the first element of each cause of action that is questioned. But other than that, you are correct, Your Honor. There is no direct attack in the context of the initial brief regarding damages. We would turn the court's attention to the Volume 9 portions of the charge conference where these issues were also raised, that the first element of each of these causes of action necessarily is dependent upon a covered claim being inappropriately addressed and resulting in a breach. And again, that brings us still full circle to the breach of contract claim. There is no mention within the terms of the contract. In fact, there's no mention within common law in the state of Texas or statutory law that says an insurer is obligated to insure the repair work done by a third party.
But isn't that one of the issues, whether it truly is a third party?
Well, it's certainly, Your Honor, one that was tried to be created by Ms. Kennedy at the time of trial, as was argued from the time of the summary judgment through pretrial, through the charge conference, and at the time of trial. The ostensible agency or the apparent agency argument is defeated as a matter of law by common law, because an insurer can only be held accountable for its duties as outlined within the terms of the policy. In fact, in this situation, we have an express exclusion that says we are not responsible for failure to mitigate. We are not responsible for improper repairs. Instead, Fire Insurance Exchange is only responsible for the direct damages caused by the accidental water event. And that's it. To expand the duties, which in fact this court said in Petit it was not going to do, but if we were going to expand the duties to where the insurer is now responsible for the alleged negligence or breach of contract of another party, is to impermissibly expand the terms of the contract itself.
Ms. Bell.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there a dispute that as to whether or not Jennifer Ramirez was FIE's agent?
That Jennifer Ramirez? No, Your Honor. There's no dispute that Jennifer Ramirez was FIE's agent.
She was a farmer's agent, wasn't she?
Absolutely.
And so the evidence dealing with her contact with Ms. Kennedy, that's all related to Ms. Kennedy's contact with an undisputed agent of FIE.
That's correct, Your Honor. Any allegations involving representations of Ms. Ramirez, that she is admittedly an agent for FIE.
And she was the claims adjuster, wasn't she?
Yes, Your Honor.
And if she, in contact with the insured, suggested a party to deal with the matter that's the subject of the claim, how does that prevent the agency argument that was made by the plaintiff and disputed by you?
I think on two levels, Your Honor. The first is because even if we take all the inferences in favor of the evidence for Ms. Kennedy, we still have written documentation signed by Ms. Kennedy where she acknowledges that ServiceMaster is independent and is not a part of FIE. But then the second aspect, Your Honor, becomes not necessarily involving the agency aspect itself regarding representations, but in regards to ensuring the acts of this third-party vendor, such that if they commit negligence rather than sue ServiceMaster for what Ms. Kennedy thought was performed incorrectly. She wanted to sue only FIE. And, Your Honor, I think the answer to your question, it may be best described by this court's opinion in the Poteet case in 2007. The facts are almost eerily similar. In that situation, the suit was filed not only as to the insurance company, but also as to the individual that sold the home, with allegations that there were misrepresentations regarding the condition of the home as well. And in the context of the Poteet case, this court noted that even though there was a recommended appraiser and a recommended repair individual that assisted at the time of the claim, they were not the agents of the insurance company. Instead, this court said that the contract is defined by those four corners. And that's all we ask for this court to continue to do today. The mere fact that there is a list of preferred vendors, when you compare it to Ms. Kennedy being told she could hire anyone else, and also having written documentation that she concedes she signed that they were independent, should prevent the agency arguments. And, Your Honors, I see that my time is ticking down, and I do want to bring up another critical aspect raised in our brief and, of course, at the time of trial, and it is one that is fatal to the claim. It's what I used to call a voter when I taught speech and debate, because in and of itself, the doctrine of concurrent causation says that if you cannot segregate between a covered and a non-covered peril in terms of the damages that are incurred, you have not established coverage, which means there can be no breach of contract.
Questions? Thank you.
Your Honor, may it please the court. My name is Craig Smith. I'm a lawyer from Corpus Christi, and I'm representing Judy Kennedy today. And I want to thank you all for inviting me up here to Fort Worth. This is the first time I've been here. Your Honor, this case, by the way, I like questions, so if you got something on your mind, just let me know about it, okay? I'm torn by this case, because half of me looks at this case, and I read this, and I say, you know, there's nothing here. We got a breach of contract evidence. They didn't challenge all the other findings. So why are we here? You know, they didn't even challenge the damage findings. Okay, so why are we here? Okay. Then the other half of me says, you know, this really bothers me. I don't like this. This doesn't feel good. It doesn't smell right. Because what Farmers is doing is they've got a deal with ServiceMaster where they steer all their insureds to ServiceMaster, and then Farmers and ServiceMaster, they two-time the insureds and they lowball them. And in this case, for example, ServiceMaster comes back and makes an estimate of $1,299.46 to fix Judy's house. That's their number. And then Farmers gives her a break and bumps it on up and pays her $1,700, okay? So she got a 50% boost on just by complaining a little bit to Farmers. Well, the jury came back and said, wait a minute, $42,000 is what you really owe Judy. That's more than 20 times what Farmers was telling her that her claim was worth. And a lot more than 20 times more than what ServiceMaster was telling her what her claim was worth. And these are people that are making specific, unambiguous representations that this is what your claim is worth, this is what's covered, Judy, this is how much you're entitled, coming from both ServiceMaster and Farmers. And guess who invited ServiceMaster to the party? It wasn't Judy. Judy didn't call up ServiceMaster in the yellow pages and say, hey, I got a problem. No, they're people, because they're all in this together. And that's exactly what the jury found. And they're right. And there's a problem with that. But, you know, we don't really have to go there. Because a jury found in an unchallenged question that ServiceMaster wasn't negligent. That there was none of the negligence, that ServiceMaster wasn't negligent, so that no failure of mitigation was a cause of injury to Judy. And that finding's unchallenged, just like most of the other jury findings in this case. Okay, so if there are only two possible causes of damage to Judy's house caused by what they just had told you was a covered event, the toilet leak, there are only two causes. One, the toilet leak. Number two, mitigation, improper mitigation. In jury question 11, the jury says it's not improper mitigation. In jury question two, they says $42,000 of this is because of the covered loss. So we essentially have evidence, which they admit it's a covered loss. The only dispute is really how much, and they didn't challenge that. So the first half of me is wanting to say, why are we here? Because none of this is challenged. And the reason why they don't want to challenge question three, Your Honor, is because of the evidence I just got done discussing. They don't want to talk about their deal with ServiceMaster, and that's exactly what the DTPA and insurance code question goes to. If they've got a scam going on between ServiceMaster and Farmers to lowball insureds, which is what the evidence very strongly shows in this case, at least in this case, because this is the only case before us, then they're pulling off a significant, they're doing a significant wrongful act, if that's what they're doing to everybody. But we know they did it to Judy. The jury found that. They don't want to talk about it, so they didn't challenge question three. So,
excuse me.
Yeah.
This isn't a trial court.
Okay.
And we are very courteous to opposing counsel here and to the bench. So just talk about the law and talk about the case and what the record shows, but don't speculate on ulterior motives of opposing counsel.
Well, it's uncontroverted, Your Honor, that they didn't challenge question three.
Okay.
That is exactly the question where they would have been required by the briefing rules to discuss in detail the standard of review and why the evidence didn't support that standard. That's where they had to do it. They had to raise that challenge, and they had to make an argument. They didn't do it, and I'll let y'all decide. Maybe we don't need to decide why they didn't do it. Because
is it your position that the entire judgment can be affirmed based on the lack of challenge to question number three and five?
No.
Okay. Then what needs to be addressed in addition to that?
My first reply point lays out, my first counterpoint lays it out, and if you find that more than a scintilla of evidence shows a covered water damage claim for any amount, you have to affirm the entire judgment, except they did raise a challenge to attorney's fees. That's how the path flows, the reasoning path flows, and I'll explain why. If they admit that this is a covered claim, the sudden toilet leak was covered, expressly covered by the policy, it caused some damage. They agree. They say it caused $1,700 worth of damage. The jury decided it was $42,000. We had an expert called Stephen Poster, and he testified starting on volume 7, page 149, for over 100 pages. Very clear, without objection. He's an expert. He testified without objection to his methodology, his qualifications, his reasoning. No objections. And he explained what was covered and how much it cost to repair with like kind and quality. And that went on for 100 pages. And so there is a scintilla of evidence that there is covered, that there are covered damages that Farmers did not pay. So we prevail on the breach of contract claim. The next issue you would go to is you look at the DTPA and insurance code claims, because they're important, because not only did the jury award the same amount of actuals, but they also awarded damages for knowing conduct. So since they didn't challenge question three, you gotta affirm that. Okay, so we get $42,000 in the breach of contract claim. We get $42,000 in knowing damages. They didn't challenge the breach of duty of good faith and fair dealing question. Okay, and we don't know why, but they didn't. And so that's an additional $10,000 that the jury awarded, and that's added onto the judgment. They didn't challenge that the factual sufficiency of that $10,000 award. Okay, So then we get to attorney's fees. They did challenge that. They said there's no evidence of segregation. My trial lawyer, Mr. Boyd, has been doing this for many years, reconstructed his hours and said they're all inextricably intertwined and explained why. And so you've got to affirm that. We've got, and so that's the path of reasoning that takes me to that conclusion. Once you get past that breach of contract claim, it's downhill all the way. And so does the court have any questions? Well, then I'll give the rest of my time back to the court, and I apologize if people tell me I'm too flamboyant all the time. But I am an appellate lawyer, I'm not a trial lawyer. So, that's just the way we roll in Corpus.
Maybe so. Rebecca?
Please, the court. Your Honors, in the context of the challenge to the multiple causes of action or the multiple damage elements, as this court is well aware, if there is even one issue that is conclusive that resulted in harmful error such that the judgment cannot stand, then the entirety of the judgment should be reversed. The initial briefing, and was again extended into the reply briefing, targeted the agency arguments of ServiceMaster and the error and the taint that occurred throughout all of the questions and throughout the course of the trial itself based upon that erroneous submission, the argument that the court just heard regarding some scamming relationship between FIE and ServiceMaster. But ServiceMaster wasn't a party to the suit, and breach of contract was the primary claim upon which even counsel today acknowledges makes everything else dependent. Because if FIE complied with its duties under the contract, it's conclusive. The argument without any evidence or authority that if even one aspect of the claim is covered, then all of the causes of action must be sustained is inaccurate. It's inaccurate under this court's precedent of Poteet, under the Supreme Court's opinions, Austin in 2003 in the Wallace opinion, all says that you start with the contract, you define the obligations of the parties to the contract, and then you look and see if the contract was complied with. The only argument that Ms. Kennedy raises for this court in how that there was no compliance involved that there was a different estimate presented by their expert, Mr. Postert, and the amount that was offered as a loss payment or a loss settlement under the terms of the contract.
Ms. Bell?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there evidence about a national agreement between ServiceMaster and Farmers whereby Farmers was guaranteeing ServiceMaster 85% of its water claims?
Your Honor, it was certainly discussed during trial over the objection, multiple objections by FIE, and in fact, the agreement ultimately was never entered into evidence. Ms. Kennedy simply made it a part of the trial through conversation, but there were motions to exclude and objections throughout to discussing a national agreement with a parent company that didn't, a franchisor, under a different party name. It was one of the reasons that there was an initial mistrial in this case that was not allowed to be discussed during the second trial.
My concern is that Farmers' relationship with ServiceMaster was not just a casual, we'll send you out to take care of Ms. Kennedy's water leak.
Your Honor, to the extent that it was ServiceMaster team, the entity that did actually go to Ms. Kennedy's home, it was just that incident. Not only that, but Ms. Kennedy authorized that work, and Ms. Kennedy had the opportunity to choose someone else. If ServiceMaster, the one that, the national one that contracted with the parent corporation, was foisted upon Ms. Kennedy to where she had no choice, and they committed their work in an improper manner, even then under this court's case authority would be that her cause of action would have been against Service Master, not against FIE. And once again, as time trickles down, I really do want to get to the doctrine of concurrent causation, which is outlined in detail in the briefing. Because, Your Honors, that is a coverage argument. And again, we're talking about covered perils. Under the doctrine of concurrent causation, if the plaintiff, in this case Ms. Kennedy, does not segregate between covered and non-covered perils, for example, this expert that they say went unchallenged actually was the subject of a motion to exclude, which was denied, he opined.
I think they're meaning challenged on appeal. There's not a challenge to that is before us.
Your Honor, in the context of concurrent doctrine, of the concurrent causation doctrine, it certainly is briefed. In fact, that entire doctrine forms the basis of why this court can simply reverse and render and not to go back for any remand on any issue. If the plaintiff, and it's a burden that's held by the insured, it is not an affirmative defense. The insured had the obligation of segregating between covered and non-covered perils. She didn't do it. She's made no response saying that she attempted to do it. Because she fails under that doctrine, this case must be reversed and rendered without need for any additional remand.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Appreciate your argument. We appreciate your traveling here. Your case is submitted. You're free to go about your business, or you're free to stay in the courtroom and watch the next argument or two. We've enjoyed having you here, and your argument has been very helpful. Thank you.